Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into episode 204 of the Sources Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR podcast network. The Sources Say podcast is, as always, presented by our good friends at Condado Tacos at the Summit at Fritz Farm. Stop in to see our friends at Condado to try some of their summer features like the mango guacamole or chicken bacon ranch taco. They've also got happy hour deals like the $6 house margaritas Monday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. We love tacos at KSR, so the partnership with Condado was perfect to fuel our crew for the big week of Bahamas coverage. Thanks to Condado. Again, it's been an awesome week. I am on my way home from the Bahamas. I'm literally walking around in the main terminal of the Miami airport just because I was so excited to talk about this team and how the Wildcats performed in a 4-0 stretch down in the Bahamas. The Big Blue Bahamas tour was a major success. The crowd was phenomenal from start to finish. The team was awesome. The players were awesome. The coaches were awesome. The access was awesome on my end. It was well worth every ridiculous penny that it cost. And I appreciate Condado Tacos for being a big part of that. They helped send me down here, and I hope I knocked the coverage out of the park, but they were a big part of all of that. So appreciate them and all of their continued support of Sources Say. I'm once again joined by the one and only Sean Smith of Go Big Blue Country. Sean, how the heck are you?
I am fantastic, Jack Pilgrim. How are you?
Oh, just living the dream. You know, it's kind of at that point where you love being in paradise. You love being on the beach and going down water slides and goofing off and being stupid, but man, I'm excited to go home. There's just something to be said about a vacation ending and a work trip ending and just wanting to be home in the comfort of my home. So I'm very glad to be boarding my very last flight. I'm actually like right above my gate as we record this to get there. So hopefully I can see when the thing lines up and I don't miss this flight, because goodness gracious, that'd be just an absolute nightmare. So anyway, long story short, the Cats go 4-0 in the Bahamas. A lot of good, really not a whole lot of bad. And I'll ask you, you know, if there are any weaknesses or any things that you think the team needs to work on most, Sean. But I mean, just let's start with the final game. It was Kentucky's really only test, just in terms of keeping it close, keeping it competitive. It ends up being a 24-point win for the Cats over the Bahamian National Select team. Sean, it was a team of grown men. Basically, the entire starting lineup was 30 to 36-year-olds. We finally got to see, you know, Oscar Tshiebwe battle against some, you know, real tough grown adults, and the entire roster was going up against them. So, let's just start with that. What did you think of the team's kind of grinded out victory, at least for, you know, three quarters of the game before they kind of spread things out late? How do you think the Cats played?
I was actually happy to see a close game for a stretch, because I think that's where we get the questions answered of which guys are going to kind of step forward, which one is going to make a difference. And you saw that in the second half. You saw Antonio Reeves go in there and just be like a microwave and just heat up and just hit all those shots in a row. You saw Jacob Toppin doing his thing. You get to see some guys kind of answer the bell when the competition gets tough, and they're down eight there late in the first half, and then they make a run, have the lead at the half, and then go on a little bit of a run there to start the second half, and then coasted to a victory down the stretch. It would have been probably ideal. That would have been the opening matchup of the weekend, but then again, maybe on fresh legs, it wouldn't have been as close and wouldn't have been the test that it was on Sunday. So I think it was the perfect way to close the weekend.
So I guess the real question is, what kind of overall takeaways can you make from a, you know, prediction standpoint, from a what your expectations were going into the week and what you thought this team could be based on the competition, based on how you played this game in particular, but the four game stretch as a whole? You know, are you using this as a Kentucky had a 50 point margin of victory for all four games, and you're using it as a holy crap, this team can be something special? Or are you more attributing that to the lack of competition that the Cats face? Because I think that's kind of one of the big questions that Kentucky fans has right now, is just, you know, how much can you use this to project how the team will play later on this year?
I think you can project it in a couple of different ways. And when I'm looking at projections, I'm going off of stats here. And I'm looking at a team that shot 38% from the three-point line as a team for the weekend. I'm also looking at a team that shot about 85% from the free throw line and shot 56 of 66 at the charity stripe. So I'm looking at stats like that and thinking, okay, those are numbers that are, that you can envision Kentucky doing in the regular season. Now, 38% as a team is a high 3-point clip, but that free throw percentage number as a team really stands out to me. And I'm looking at guys like Xavier Wheeler, 14 of 15 on the week, Antonio Reeves, 10 of 10. I mean, they got dudes that are going to be able to hit free throws and hit shots, and I think that that's something that you take away from the trip. But when it comes to competition, obviously, we don't get all the questions answered. I mean, it'd be great to kind of crown this team and say, all right, this is definitely a Final Four contender after four games in the Bahamas, and I certainly think that they will be a Final Four contender. But, I mean, obviously, there's areas of their game that they do need to improve on. I want to see them keep getting better and better on the defensive end of the floor. I want to see the offensive rhythm continue to kind of progress toward where it needs to be, and see some other guys like CJ Frederick, when he gets up to full strength, like work him in there and get him a little bit more run and see what can happen. But to me, the biggest takeaway when it comes to question, and I don't really have concerns with it, because I don't think there was an area of their game where I really was like, man, they need to significantly improve this, or I'm worried about this. I was worried about depth at guard going in, but then Aduthiero showed us what he can do, and that kind of eased some of that. Antonio Reeves looks like a dude that can be a star at Kentucky, especially scoring the basketball. And if he commits to the defensive end, it's going to be hard to keep him off the floor. But my thing is this, Jack, and it's the thing that Cal's been best at. How does he keep all these guys healthy? Like, or not healthy, but happy. Sorry. Hopefully he keeps them all healthy. But how does he keep them all happy? Healthy has been the problem the last few years. So not happiness. But how does he keep them all happy? We've known since 2015 that he said he won't platoon again. It feels like there's a collection and a lot of guys on this team that are going to deserve to play because they have so many veterans. And then these talented freshmen coming in, we know they're going to play. How does he keep them all happy? How does he keep them sharing the success if he's not going to platoon? I think that that is something, and obviously that's probably the one thing that we should not have any concerns about Cal with.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of one of my big takeaways, and maybe even my biggest, was while I was sitting there on the sideline or on the baseline watching the games, you know, I'd look at a lineup and I go, dang, I really like this lineup. Like, I love the length of this lineup. I love the shooting of this lineup. I love the rebounding, you know, whatever it was. And then I'd look over at the scorer's table, and then you'd have Kaysen Wallace ready to check in. You'd have Xavier Wheeler ready to check in. You'd have Oscar Tshiebwe ready to check in. Like, guys that are high-level contributors, or guys that are expected to be high-level contributors, weren't even in the game when Kentucky was playing at its kind of best basketball. And it just kind of made me, again, you brought up the they're not going to platoon thing, and you know, I get that. But at the same time, you'd sit there and watch games and you'd be like, man, there are three guys on the bench right now that are, you know, key contributors that need minutes. How are we going to do this rotation? And I thought it was interesting that when, you know, there were times that Cal was rotating three guys in at a time, sometimes even four guys in at a time. And I thought that was, you know, kind of pretty telling. And I was just like, okay, I don't think that this, you know, we're don't want to throw away around the platoon word. I mean, that's just not a something that Kentucky fans are wanting to hear. But at the same time, I agree. It's definitely worth noticing that when you have that many pieces that can just do everything that you're looking for, it definitely makes you wonder how the rotations are going to work out, and you know, how playing time is going to play out. And I have the same thing in the back of my mind as you do, Sean.
Yeah, and I think that that's the area you're looking at, because you know Oscar Tshiebwe is going to play a ton of minutes when it gets down to the regular season and it's crunch time. You know, Xavier Wheeler, Kaysen Wallace, all these guys are going to be on the floor. And I think the one of the big discussions that comes out of it is now we can kind of start keying in on what an ideal rotation would look like. We can start talking about who we think the starting five is going to be on opening night. And people, here's how you know so many people played well. You and I may come up with a different starting five, and every single listener that listens to us tonight, there may be five or six different lineup combinations because they may just go with what they thought was best. And that's the sign of a really good team. That's a sign of a lot of guys that can come in and do different things. Like my lineup right now, if Kentucky started the season tonight, it would be Xavier Wheeler, Kaysen Wallace, Antonio Reeves, Jacob Toppin, and Oscar Tshiebwe. And that's taken out Damian Collins, who arguably had the most impressive week with some of the things that he did on the floor. It's taken out Chris Livingston. That's the depth that this team has. That's the talent that this team has. They have plenty of options. A lot of questions were answered. Antonio Reeves was the only transfer that they added in the offseason. And we see why they did. And I told you multiple times, I'm like, there's no way he's not going to be a 20-point scorer at Kentucky. My goodness, like he just gets baskets in bunches. And you look and you see he shot 42 shots, shot 52% from the floor, 14 of 27 for three for 51, 52%. Perfect at the free throw line, 10 of 10. Jack, that's an elite three-level scorer who can get his own, something that Kentucky really didn't have in that role of a Davion Mintz or a Kellen Grady last year. Like this is a different piece to the puzzle than what those two were a year ago.
And I just go back to our conversations that we had, Sean, where, you know, we were very blunt about the departure of Shaedon Sharpe. And we said, look, you're not going to find a three-level scorer like him who can jump the way he can, who can, you know, score the way he can, who can shoot the way he can. You're not going to find a top 10, you know, superstar caliber talent in the transfer portal. And that was right when, you know, the Antonio Reeves stuff started ramping up and, you know, those two timelines were kind of overlapping with one another. And you know, the question was, can Antonio Reeves be the Shaedon Sharpe of this team? And we were, you know, at least me, I will firmly, thoroughly admit that I was wrong on this after hearing what I've heard about him behind the scenes. You know, it was very, really interesting talking to Coach O at the podium on that last day. He said kind of a sly comment where he was, you know, he was like, I'm glad that you all finally get to see what we saw. It was kind of one of those, we were right, and we always knew we were right. I'm glad that the world can finally get a chance to see that. And I think it's true. I think they deserve the world of credit for how they were able to identify that talent in the transfer portal, see him as a guy that, okay, look at what he can do as a scorer. Look at the way he moves. Look at the way he can create for himself and you know, get to his spots and score in all these unique, creative, crafty ways that will translate. And that was something that I was very, very concerned about, how that level will translate from, you know, just how seamless that transition will be coming from, you know, the Missouri Valley, coming from Illinois State and playing at a place like freaking Kentucky. I will admit, I just didn't think, I thought he would be the Davion Mintz replacement off the bench. I thought he would have been a great, you know, 8 to 10 point per game score where, you know, yeah, he was going to do some good things, but he wasn't going to be that next level, that next tier of player. And Sean, I will gladly admit that I'm wrong because Kentucky has clearly hit a home run on Antonio Reeves.
Yeah. I'm going to admit that I'm wrong too. Cause I mean, there's going to be games where he's going to score 20 plus just because he's that guy that if you put him in and you get the game going and there's a couple of possessions that are back to back in transition, you lose him. Especially when you're worrying about what Kentucky can do with Oscar Tshiebwe running to the rim and what Jacob Toppin can do running to the rim. The way Kentucky's going to defend this year with all that length and athleticism that they have, there's going to be plenty of opportunities for them to get out and run in transition. And I think that's where Antonio Reeves is going to just make a killing, is just getting up and down the floor, running full speed, taking those threes in transition. You saw a couple throughout the weekend. I mean, he is ready to shoot every time he catches it. But the thing that separates him is he's about 6'6". He's got these long arms. He can create his own shot. How many step backs did we see him take off the bounce that he created on his own? The one in the corner had a couple off of the key yesterday. Those are areas where last year when it got down to the end of the year and Kentucky was banged up with Ty Washington, Xavier Wheeler's not able to do those things. Like Xavier is best at setting the table for someone else or attacking, trying to get the free throw line, doing some things like that. But when you look at what they had, this is a significant upgrade because this is a guy that you could say, okay, you go get yourself a bucket here. We need a basket. They've got Cason Wallace looks like he's going to be a guy that can do that. Jacob Toppin's doing it a little bit now. Collectively, this was a really good weekend and or a week down there. And how about this too? Somebody asked me about free throw attempts and they were talking about Xavier Wheeler and the low number of attempts he had a year ago. I don't even think, was it, did he even get to 60 free throw attempts on the season last year? It was a really low number. Got to 15 free throw attempts in four games. And we know that he didn't play the same amount of minutes that he will play in the regular season. So it was good to see him getting to the free throw line and hitting those free throws as well. So Kentucky's backcourt, I'm very pleased with where it is right now. And you just think about what it's going to be like when CJ Frederick is actually able to go and there's not a load management concern there.
Yeah. And I mean, how about CJ Frederick? That was kind of a player that we were all very high on. We knew what he could be as a catch and shoot guy, but you know, and he's played a lot of reps in the Big Ten. And that's something that, you know, talking to Chin Coleman, after I think the second game of the week, talking to Chin, he said, I coached against him at Illinois in the Big Ten. I have seen him on countless occasions just whoop our players' butts. I mean, just doing so many little things on the floor that just was so far beyond shooting. You know, yeah, we know he's a 47% career 3-point shooter from at Iowa, but you guys aren't seeing the other things. His very, you know, unbelievable assist to turnover ratio. The guy just does not turn the ball over. That's something that you said on the show several times. Again, in the Bahamas, he proved that again. I think he had finished with one turnover in a total of like 40 minutes or whatever it ended up being. I mean, that is an elite, underrated statistic that came out of that. And again, we talked about it on one of the previous shows. There was an entire segment of the film session that we got to see in John Calipari's suite. One of the first days there, dedicated entirely to CJ's defense. He didn't score a single point in that first game, took one shot, and Cal went out of his way to say, I was wrong about you, because apparently, you know, talking to people behind the scenes, apparently he kind of lashed out at CJ at halftime of that first game and said, you know, you got to be better defensively. You had a couple screw ups. And Cal admitted at film, he said, look, I'm will admit when I'm wrong on after watching film on something. And he said, CJ, I will admit I was wrong to you. You did not deserve me lashing out at you. You were incredible defensively. And Sean, he put together an entire highlight tape of all of the defensive stops that he made, the disruptions, the you know, slapping down at the ball and you know, just being disruptive, being aggressive, just being active on that end of the floor on top of making the extra pass, doing, you know, bringing the ball at the floor and running the passing lane you know, just running the floor well, doing all the little things that it takes to win at this level. And that was something that Cal was like, I was wrong about you in this event in particular. Chin Coleman went out of his way to praise, like, look, we know what this kid can do. We've seen it on film from start to finish. Now you guys are able to see it here in a Kentucky uniform. Again, I wish we got to see him on that last day. Wish we got to see a little bit more of him. But goodness gracious, I thought CJ Frederick just tremendous for his debut.
Yeah, and I grade his week an A+. And the biggest reason why is he played and he came out of the week healthy, and he's going to get into these workouts and stuff and into official practice ready to roll when the season comes around in November. I think that was the biggest thing, is you just wanted to see him get up and down the floor, let Kentucky fans see him run up and down, get him some confidence, get him healthy, and just get some basketball under his belt at Kentucky. It's been a long time. It's been since his days at Iowa that he's been able to run up and down the floor in a competitive game of basketball against another team. So it was really encouraging to see him complete the weekend. And just the numbers overall, just looking at some stuff here, the balance scoring, I mean, they had six guys finish with double figures, and Chris Livingston just missed it with 9.8 points per game. So the balance was there. For a team in August that is still learning and figuring out who they are, I said that about Xavier Wheeler from night one. I know a lot of people, when I named that starting lineup a second ago, there's probably going to be people listening to the show that the guy that they would take out would probably be Xavier Wheeler and put Wallace at the one and with Reeves and, you know, go a different route with the backcourt. Maybe stick Livingston in there at the three alongside Toppin. But to me, Jack, those struggles in game one, it's harder for your point guard to kind of blend in with new faces. And I know Oscar Sheway, Jacob Toppin, and so many familiar faces back, but guys are asked now to do a little bit different things than what they did a year ago. Jacob Toppin has a larger role than he had 6 months ago. You have Antonio Reeves, that's new. Chris Livingston, CJ Frederick breaking his way in there with Xavier Wheeler, Cason Wallace. Like, to me, it took a little bit for the guys to kind of get used to one another, for Wheeler to kind of figure things out. I thought he was excellent the final three games of the trip. I thought Xavier Wheeler was exactly what the Bob Cousy Award finalist was supposed to be in those three games. I think he's going to be headed for another big year.
And I think on that note, do you think he's almost become undervalued by this fan base and just, you know, college basketball as a whole, just because you know exactly what he's going to bring to the table? And again, for better and for worse, we know what his flaws are. And I just had a really vulnerable conversation with Xavier, and I have a feature in the works on KSR about it, where I sat down with Xavier after a game, and you know, he flat out said, like, I knew exactly what I was good at this offseason. I knew exactly what I was bad at. And I was like, well, can you dive into to both of those? What are you exceptional at and what are you bad at? And he said, this past year and throughout my college basketball career, I know that I play way too loosely at times. I know that I get ahead of myself. I get way too overly aggressive. And that's where my poor decision making happens. That's where my mistakes happen. That's when I turn the ball over. There was kind of this moment in this offseason where it's like, I need to reel it in. I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm elite at. I know I can push the pace and move the ball up the floor unlike anybody else. I know I can get paint touches and find open teammates better than anybody else in college basketball. I need to maximize those abilities of mine and minimize some of the flaws that I have. I know that I struggle shooting. I've been working on that this entire offseason. The stats show that I was much better and, you know, much improved this past season, but I need to continue to get better at that. And he finished the week 0-for-9 from three. So clearly there's still a lot more work to do. And it's a good thing that we're only in August right now, and we still have 3 months before games are played. But I appreciated that part of him, Sean, where he was just extremely vulnerable about who he is as a basketball player, what he needs to improve and what he's very good at. I thought he had a tremendous week.
I did too. And he's one of these guys that you just cannot let the bad outweigh the good. And I just don't think that's possible with him. I think that there's too much good in his game. There's a reason why he's led the SEC in assist at two different schools. Probably has a really good opportunity to do it again this year for a third straight year. And I mean, you're talking about a guy that when it comes to Power Five conferences, you won't see another guy on that list in the last decade that's done it more than once besides him. And he's already done it twice. So just looking at his stats and though that 0-for-9 from three, you know why I can live with that? I can live with that if he's still shooting 61% from the floor and he's still shooting 93% from the free throw line. Now, those are ridiculous numbers. Like, he's not going to shoot 61%. In the regular season, but if he shoots 52-51% from the field and is an 84-85% free throw shooter, then I can live with that 3-point percentage being what it was a year ago or being even what it was at Georgia, just because I just don't think that he's going to take as many attempts when it gets into the regular season. What did you think of Cason Wallace from three? 6-for-15, 40% for the week. Chris Livingston, 6-for-10, 60%. Two guys that look like when they get their feet set and they take good shots, they're very capable.
I'll admit, I think Cason Wallace had the prettiest shot of the week. I think when he was catching it and shooting it, when it was kind of a, you know, there were times that he would try to create his own and kind of uncomfortably set up his own shot. And I thought that's kind of where he struggled a little bit. But when he was kind of catching it in stride and squaring up to the basket and lifting, it was cash every time, Sean. I mean, there were so many times that he would lift and he would release and I'd go, there's no way that misses. Like, that's a make. And I mean, it would barely even touch the net. I thought in terms of pretty shots, Antonio Reeves, you know, the Chet White of UK Athletics posted a photo today where it showed just kind of the flick of Antonio's shots. And that's just butter. That's just pure gold. But in terms of the other guys, I think that is, could not have been more impressed with Cason. He's known as the defensive standout. He's known as the guy that's going to be, you know, the gritty, do it all, you know, all around type of talent where, yeah, he can shoot, but he's not an elite shooter. But I thought maybe not as an elite shooter, but I think he can be a very good shooter in the year, shooting something, 38% from three. And if you're getting that out of Case and Wallace, Sean, I think the sky's the limit, especially for that backcourt.
Yeah, absolutely. His shot looks so good out of his hands. The rotation on it, I mean, it's perfect. And I think that it's certainly an area of his game that if he's able to do that the way he defends, I mean, look at the steals he had, 12 steals down there in four games. Like it's going to be an all SEC defensive guy from the moment he steps foot on campus and starts playing regular season games. That's the type of defender. You arguably got the best defensive backcourt, not only in the SEC, but possibly in college basketball with him and Xavier. And then you got Jacob Toppin on the floor with him. Let's talk about Jacob Toppin a minute before we move on. Would you have thought that he would be the second, would hit the second most threes going into that week if we had told you that on Wednesday, 8 of 15?
Yeah, I absolutely would not have. And I think what's so fascinating is the last day when it came down to that final vote for MVP, it literally took until the second half where Antonio went absolute just nuclear that it was Jacob Toppin's to lose because he was absolutely sensational from start to finish this week. I mean, he had a couple lows where, his shot wasn't falling and the aggressiveness wasn't there. He wasn't looking to attack. But Sean, when he caught fire, I mean, Jacob Toppin, that third game, I believe, he was unguardable. I mean, when you're 6'10 and can move the way that he does and you're that athletic and you can do all of the little things, everybody has known about the athleticism. Everybody has known about the length and the defensive upside and all that. But we've been waiting for the skill side to translate. We've been waiting for the shooting side to translate. And he did both. I mean, he was finishing around the basket with touch, and he was playing with finesse instead of just kind of reckless abandonment. He was, there's a lot of talk. Can he take a star jump? When can he start turning that potential into actual star production? Can he be a star when he has that newfound freedom without Keon Brooks ahead of him in the starting lineup? Can he make that serious all SEC level jump? And we've debated it all offseason saying, I think he can, but he still has a lot of work to do. How can he get to that point? And this week in particular, when he finishes the way he did, Sean, he finishes 16.8 points. He shoots 56.5% from the field, 53% from three, on 8 of 15 overall. And then he goes 7 for 9 from the free throw line. Very impressive defensively. I mean, that is what an all SEC player looks like. That's what a first round draft pick looks like. I thought Jacob Toppin, we were looking to see if he could be a star. That's what a star looks like. That's what a first round talent looks like. The four position was just such a kind of polarizing position last season. And after seeing four games of him against this type of, length and size and all of that, I have no concerns about that four position. And on top of, Chris Livingston playing a small ball four, Damian Collins doing what he did, Sean, I think that position is in very good hands this season.
Yeah. Third leading rebounder from the week too, with 22 total rebounds, 10 assists. Only three turnovers.
Strong rebounder too. I mean, he'd go up and take it from the top of the backboard. I love the jumping through the ceiling to grab it with two hands and bring it down strong. That was something that caught my attention almost on every rebound.
Well, and the thing with this Kentucky team that's standing out, I mean, you're talking about Damian Collins, and going back 10 years to Anthony Davis and some of the lobs that Davis would catch. Damian Collins can cover that amount of ground as well. Like, I'm convinced you could throw it at the shot clock and he'd go get it. So Kentucky's not only playing, they're not playing 10 feet. When you play Kentucky, you got to cover about 14, 15 feet. And because they got guys like Toppin, they got guys like Damian Collins, these guys that can go up and get these balls above the rim. And when those are some of John Calipari's best teams. But one note on Jacob Toppin, I want to see him commit to being a 2-foot scorer. Off of 2 feet. When he made those plays yesterday, there were two there late in the first half where he went in off 2 feet. He finished on through contact, really strong plays. The one-footed runners at 6'9", I want to see him go off 2 feet, Jack, because those shots turn into three-point plays instead of just maybe making a basket or maybe getting to the free throw line for two free throws. Those are three-point plays if he becomes a 2-foot scorer.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that when he struggled this week, it was as a result of, you know, the off balance trying to, you know, Cal was calling it the leg kickers where he was kind of flailing in himself, trying to, you know, fade away the off balance, you know, kind of floaters. And, you know, he was trying to be pretty at times. He was trying to finish, you know, through two defenders at times and, you know, got really sloppy on a couple of possessions in particular where, you know, there's, you know, a lot of grumbling of, oh, you know, here's, you know, Jacob Toppin being overly confident, thinking that he's a superstar already. He's not that yet. You know, I saw it all on social media, and I don't think that's fair to, you know, describe of him just for a couple poor possessions. But that's where he struggled. And I think that's definitely, so I agree, that's definitely something that he'll need to improve on. But again, this is August 15th. So, yeah. Players go home for a week. They come back for school. And then after that, Sean, I mean, we still have three more months before we even start to have to worrying about any other game. So there's still a lot of time for Jacob Toppin to fix. And if we were waiting for an offseason jump, I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better, just, I mean, the season, the last season ended in March. So when you really think March, June, July, August, I mean, it's, or March, April, May, June, July, August. So 5 months it's been, and we've already seen that much growth on Jacob Toppin's end. I'm very excited to see what the next 3 months hold for him as well.
I am too. And I'm also excited to see what happens with Chris Livingston. And I love his game. I love how he rebounds. To me, that's going to be a guy that, regardless of his role, how many minutes he plays, you're going to see him be there in the top three, top four, and team double-doubles, I think, by the end of the year because he rebounds so hard. And that improved that three-point shot, 6 of 10 from three, the plays that he makes with the ball in his hands, the assist, all of it. Like, that is going to be a guy. Kentucky has plenty of options, Jack, at multiple positions. I think that's probably the biggest takeaway. Other than the defensive potential that they have, I think this team has a collection of guys that can be elite on-ball defenders. But I think that they also have a total team that could be an elite off-ball defender, those help defenders that Kentucky needs. Are they going to be able to block the amount of shots that they did in the Bahamas in the regular season? That remains to be seen. Will Jacob Toppin and Duthiero and all those guys be able to block that same number? We'll see. But I think that this team in position – has a lot of length and athleticism that can just overwhelm you on the defensive end of the floor. And I think by the time we get to January, this will be one of the top efficiency teams in college basketball in that category.
And you bring up a good point about the defense, because that was something that was clearly the main point of emphasis this week. I mean, these are really valuable practices, Sean. I mean, this is time that, you know, most schools don't get. And you know, the time that Cal had, me being at every single one of the practices, every single one of the shoot-arounds, it was, Sean, I'm telling you, 95% defensive drills, defensive rotation, pick-and-roll defense, you know, out-of-bound defense. It was almost exclusively work on the defensive end. And I thought that was kind of a fascinating thing, thinking, okay, we already know what this team's defensive potential is. Do you think that's kind of something on Cal's end where he sees the defensive potential and he goes, okay, if we can drive this point home early and all of these defensive and with all these valuable practices that we have, what can we be in 3 months? What was your kind of takeaway on such a heavy, you know, from a coaching perspective, such a heavy emphasis on defense at this point in the offseason?
I don't think that there's any concerns on offense is why I think that he was so focused on defense. When you have your point guard returning and you have the reigning national player of the year and Oscar Tshiebwe returning, who's going to just get you so many extra possessions on the offensive end with his rebounding alone, and then you add the shooters that you have, I think that it's easy to kind of look and say, well, we're going to be good offensively regardless of when we start picking this thing up. Like, we know by the time we get to January – they should be a team that's probably in the top 10 in KenPom in offensive efficiency. Now it's like, do we get that defensive number there? And that was kind of the area that was missing at times in the years where they've had opportunities to make a deep run. Like last year, that defensive efficiency number, it kind of went away down the stretch. Now, how much did injuries play into that? I don't know. But it certainly, they weren't defending at the level in March that they had been defending in January and early February. So it feels like Cal knows that this team has versatile pieces on that end of the floor. And a lot of people that probably watch the game of basketball and talk about it, they probably think that only versatility is on the offensive end. It's actually on the defensive end as well, because you can switch so many positions with this team. A guy like Jacob Toppin can guard 1 through 4, maybe can even guard 1 through 5 with some of the added bulk that he's added to his frame. Chris Livingston, another guy that can play and switch off. You got a nuclear backcourt on the defensive end in Kaysen Wallace and Sabre Wheeler that can make some switches and do some things. You have elite players that can get in the passing lane. Jack, to me, the thing as a coach, you're looking at players being in position. This team has so much length that they don't have to actually be in the right spot. They can cover so much ground, some short closeouts on the defensive end. This is going to be a very good defensive team. I think this will be one of those KenPom teams that'll look up and they'll be in the top 10 in both offensive and defensive efficiency, knocking on the doors of March.
And what is the statistic? If you can finish, what is it, top 20 in both? That historically, the Final Four teams, that is in a very direct indicator of a Final Four team. Is that correct?
It is, yeah. And I think right down the end last year, didn't they fall out of that top 20 on defense?
They did.
And then you look up, and I mean, surely that's not what was the only thing that was wrong. But when you look at numbers and you look at those numbers that take in so much of games, I mean, we're talking the entire body of work of what you do on the basketball floor. You cannot hide when it comes to those numbers. You are what you are. You are what the numbers say you are. And I do think that this is going to be a team that is going to be anchored on the defensive end, but also a team that's going to turn that defense into easy offense that'll shoot it well. They're going to be elite in transition. I think this is going to be a very good Kentucky basketball team, and that's not overreacting from what I saw in the Bahamas. I'm not calling Kentucky to go 40-0. I'm not calling them to even win 30 regular season games or anything crazy like that. I'm not calling them to win 28-29. But this will be a really good basketball team that should be the favorite in the SEC and probably one of the favorites to cut down the nets in the Final Four.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Sean, I am going to wrap us up here because I – have no idea if we're boarding or not. Maybe I've already missed my flight. I have no idea. I'm assuming that I'm still all good, but we have plenty of time to let this marinate and, you know, just dive into this film a little bit more, dive into, you know, the nuts and bolts of what we saw and just kind of overall takeaways. Maybe we find something in the film that we missed before, or, you know, some other developments happen. So we'll let this one ride for a little bit and appreciate again Condado Tacos for supporting this trip. It was an absolute blast. Maybe the next show that we do, we'll talk about some of the in-depth stuff, behind the scenes stuff that I got to do and kind of give fans an inside look of what it's like to, you know, be a Kentucky basketball player, being in a film room, being in a shoot around, what all those things look like. So we have plenty more where this comes from. But until then, Sean, where can fans find your work?
You can find my work at GoBigBlueCountry.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at GBBCountry.
Find me on Twitter as well, at Jack Pilgrim KSR. Reach out to me via email at JPilgrim@KentuckySportsRadio.com. With that, we'll be back next time for the Jam-Packed Sources Say podcast. We will see you then.